Welcome to Casual Yelling, the casual conversation podcast with 84% less or more yelling, depending on how you view this episode. I'm Matt Elfring. Hello, how are you? I'm fine. Thank you for immediately asking me that. Before we end season one, which is next week, is the end of season one, I thought let's get into something really, really fun for me. Maybe not so much for you. We're going to talk about Dungeons and Dragons. Oh boy. Get your Dungeons and Dragons hats out. So I've been playing since, I think, 1999, roughly with the same group of people. More people come in, more some people leave. We play every Wednesday night. Same, pretty much like the same core group of four people since 2002. It's been a long time. And I've been a DM a few times. And what I've noticed from when other people DM, when I DM, we all have our specific rules, things that we like to do to enhance the game, sometimes make things more difficult for the players, sometimes things that'll make it easier for the players. And I want to talk about, as the few times I have DM'd, rules I have come up with, homebrew DM rules that I really, really like, and I think more people should implement. Not everything in this you should implement, but there are some ideas that you should implement into your game. Everyone has different homebrew rules. That's fine. This is based on what I like. So the number one thing is, as a DM, I think I've done like three games at this point. We've had like 8 million different games throughout the years. Not literally 8 million. It's probably like 30, maybe. I don't know. Between D&D, Pathfinder, Call of Cthulhu, Obsidian, Pendragon, which I wasn't around to play the first time. Mainly D&D, though. Lots of games. But as a DM, and everybody in our group, no one's ever done this. Typically, when you start a game of D&D, you start with a session zero. You've built your character. You all get together, talk about who your characters are, kind of give a little bit of a background to them, yada, 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 yada. I've never done a session zero. My friends and I have never done a session zero, whoever's running the game. We basically just jump right into the story, mainly because everyone meeting in this group has been brought together for a greater purpose. Very rarely are we in a situation where everybody knows each other. I think there's been two or three games where everybody already knows each other, but we don't get that session zero. So we kind of get those ideas of who the character is and their background out through conversation. So when it comes down to the whole session zero thing, where you're half metagaming because you're telling other characters, this is who I am, this is my background, I feel like it doesn't help in the main story. Because you're always, your character and you, well, you are always going to be metagaming, in a sense where metagaming is knowing about things. You personally are going to know things about the world that your character wouldn't, but you're going to play it off as your character knows it. That's the simplest way to explain metagaming. So you playing your character are going to know things about other people's characters that your character wouldn't necessarily know, but you're going to play it off like you do know, which is kind of, to me, a big no-no. So session zero is gone. We may talk to each other outside of the game before we start, saying like, I'm playing a human rogue. I'm playing as a elfin druid. Basically, a lot of that is so we don't double up on classes, which is also metagaming. But there's been numerous times, like in the group that we have right now, there's two rogues. I'm a rogue and my friend Andrew is a rogue. We play rogue very, very differently. I'm a rogue scout. He's a rogue assassin, is the best way to explain it. Through different subclasses you get through the main player's handbook or secondary books that added in different subclasses if you want them. So I just don't like session zero. I don't like doing it in D&D. I actually don't even like playing it with someone else running the game. I feel like it just kind of, you don't get to learn anything new with your character. And it's really hard to make that separation between your character and what you know. Although we will call out metagaming on occasion. Luckily, I'm a Tricreen currently, so I can telepathically speak to other willing members of the party individually. So anytime my character sees anything, doesn't really say, you can't really say telepathically. You can just send thoughts and of concepts and ideas and things you see to the other player. So it's not actually a conversation, but we treat it as a conversation for all intents and purposes, whatever. Session zero. I don't like it. Let's talk about fudging dice rolls. Everyone, except probably for my one friend Kurt, fudges dice rolls. It's going to happen as a DM. It's going to happen a lot more. Me personally, fudging dice rolls is a mixed bag. I'm against the idea of a GM playing DM or GM playing God when you're in a situation of chance. There's no luck. If you're rolling a D20, it's 1 out of 20 is your, that's your odds. That's your odds. It's like you come up against a dragon and I decide to roll an attack on you and it's low. I'm not going to say it's high and hit you to spare you from a bad decision you're making. However, rolling low may bring you into a false sense of security that you could actually attack it. But it's like, it's if it's on the other side of things and I roll low, I'm not going to pretend it's high. Like, there's caveats to all of this. I will occasionally give certain characters leeway if they have a lot of pegs. We're going to explain pegs in a minute because this is a really random system. But if they have pegs and it would have killed them, I'll just take pegs away. I've done this once for a character with a whole lot of pegs and just took their pegs. So let's talk about pegs, though. Pegs is something that a group of friends still bring up. They think pegs is a joke. I mean, like, it is a joke. Like, the joke is you really knocked him down a peg. And we say things like, you're not allowed to talk about pegs or you'll get a peg. Pegs are a good thing in my games when I'm running them. You are never going to know. Think of it like inspiration points. Pegs are a lesser form of inspiration points. However, your character doesn't know they're getting pegs. They'll never know. And I'm a lot more lenient about giving out pegs than I would be with an inspiration point. I don't know why I'm going to explain inspiration points, because I feel like there might be someone listening to this that doesn't play D&D. Inspiration points are given by the DM. You can like reroll. You can just reroll things. You can do something differently. It's a reset button for a certain situation. That's inspiration points. Like, as easily broke down as I can break them down. So pegs are kind of like that. I will give pegs to a character if they do something really cool, if they make a decision I like. And a lot of times that decision goes off of the plan I have as a DM, but I think it works for the story. You get a peg. Conversations you have can give you pegs. It's all about the actions your character takes and how you play your character. If you're really playing your character, I'll give you pegs. There are caveats to this rule as well. I will take away pegs if you mention pegs. If you mention pegs, you get a point taken away. If you mention someone else mentioned pegs and I didn't catch it, you'll get a peg. The number one rule of pegs is you don't talk about pegs, but you're allowed to talk about someone else saying pegs and tattling on them. So here's what pegs actually are. Your character gets pegs throughout this system, and pegs are there. It's luck. It is 100% like luck points. So as I mentioned on, where did I mention that? Fudging dice rolls where I don't want the character to necessarily like die for the situation that we're in. And I don't really want to fudge a dice roll. So I'll take away all the pegs from the character in order for them not to die. Again, the players don't know what I'm doing with this system. I'm explaining this system really for the first time, but I have journals that have pages and pages and pages of how pegs actually works within the game. So originally with PEGS, when I first started using it, it was for a game I ran called Bard Quest, where everybody in the group had to be a bard and you were in a traveling band that was going to play on a pirate ship for rich people that wanted to be on a luxury pirate ship. And the money that you would make per night for each character was based on a roll that took into accommodation of how many pegs you had, which is, it's kind of Thaco-y in that way, where it's a spreadsheet to figure out how much money you could make based on a D100 roll. So like it could be modifiers. If you have between 1 and 5 pegs, it's a 1 modifier. If you have between 6 and 10, it's a double modifier. Again, I have it all written out. This sounds confusing. So pegs became luck points. And I really liked that idea. I took it a few steps further with characters dying or not dying, or in order to move the game forward quicker, I would take away pegs from a character that keeps failing something. I'm not going to fudge dice rolls, but using pegs can be used to fudge dice rolls for me, but it's based on how well the person is playing the character in the game. When it comes to, like, let's say they're going into a treasure chest, the characters find a treasure chest, one person opens it, this is kind of random hell, random hell is another thing I'll explain to you. I'll roll a D100 for a list full of items, and depending on how the character has played throughout this dungeon or throughout this adventure, I will use pegs to go positive or negative or positive. So like, let's say you roll like a 55 and what you find in the chest is like one piece of iron, but like you're 1 point away from getting a whole bunch of gold or a bag of holding. I'll move you if you've been playing really well. And then I kind of noticed that like Cult of Cthulhu uses this with like talent points, where you can move a few numbers with your roll in order to have a better outcome for your character. So that was kind of cool because I saw pegs, secondary implemented it after the first run. I saw it when we played Call of Cthulhu, Pulp Cthulhu, I should say, is what we were playing. So that was a system that kind of existed in a way, except it's DM run instead of character run. So I'm the DM, I'm running pegs. That also brings us to random hell. Random hell goes into fudging dice rolls going into pegs. Pegs is the basis for everything when I'm running games. But now that I've said this out loud, I'll never use pegs again. Maybe I will. We'll use pegs again. Again, you're not going to be aware if I am. Random hell is, I describe it as random hell. I have a dungeon set up. I'm not very theater of the mind when it comes to running dungeons. I actually have layouts and setups, and I will bring actual like put together dungeons to the group. There will be Fog of War. When I say Fog of War, I'll just give them kind of a section of the dungeon. I'll click in another part. Like, these are 3D models, essentially. I'm using miniatures for the characters. I'm using miniatures for the people they're fighting. I have treasure chests, and I also have treasure chests that are actually mimics, and you can have like a mimic mini. Same goes for like couches, boxes, and clocks. I have houses. I have town squares. And as I've gotten further into this, I'm not using like warlock tiles anymore. I'm actually making sections of maps, like 3D printing houses and all this. And we're getting into random hell. I'm kind of trying to set up random hell. And random hell exists because I have dungeons and maps set out in a certain way where I don't know what's coming. I could, as a DM, I could just say like there's going to be in my head, say like, okay, this treasure chest is going to be trapped. But what's more fun for me is me not knowing what's about to happen, because I feel like I don't want to have a tell on my face when a character is, or when a player is looking at me saying like, I should investigate this, or like, I'm coming up through this dungeon and I walk through a doorway, and I don't want the player looking at me going like, oh, I see on his face that he's got something sinister in his eye. I don't want that. So as we were playing, I'll do what's called random hell. Again, this is a spreadsheet. And I will quietly, I don't think anybody's heard me do this, because Random Hell I've never brought up to the other people I play with. I will quietly roll either a D100 or D20 based on the system I have set up. And certain rooms or areas can have certain effects or certain traps, or most of the time it's nothing. There's a good chunk of the spreadsheet that is set up as like nothing. Like we're walking through the hallway, and as they walk, I'll do a random hell roll. A lot of the times nothing comes up because I'm only doing like 10 to 20% as they go through an area of something happening within a dungeon. If you're going into a house, it'll be maybe a 5% chance. If you're going into the basement of a known rogue's house, that will bump up to 60 to 70%. But it's all, you know, I roll that D100 or D20. Again, it depends on the situation I have set up. And if you hit like 75, that would correlate to the spreadsheet. What does 75 mean? Okay, between 70 and 80, it means you find a treasure chest. Between 70 and 75, it means there's a trap here. But the players will still have time to investigate after I've made that roll. Which, again, you could see on my face that I have done something differently. But the whole goal is I don't know what's coming. You don't know what's coming. I'll know what's coming as you enter that space. You could run an investigation check as a player on, let's say, a door that may be either magically or non-magically locked. I'll do a random hell roll first, and then I'll say, okay, you can do your investigation. So I don't know what's wrong with that door, if there is anything wrong with that door, until right before you would roll that investigation. So random hell, I think, has some pluses to it. There's potential for a lot of negatives if everything is trapped. But again, that's all based on what kind of environment these players are in. So random hell can correlate with pegs. I can move things up or down depending on how the person's playing the character, based on how the group is working together to achieve a goal or not achieve a goal, depending on the alignment of the characters and how the characters play off of each other. So that's kind of how random hell works and how it goes into pegs and fudging dice rolls. All my homebrew stuff kind of correlates together. One thing I hate about metagaming is death rolls. I hate them so much. I hate that characters make their own death rolls. And why I hate that is because the character knows how many potential rolls left they have until they die. And also, because of metagaming, and it's impossible not to do this as a player, you know how many potential rolls your party member has until they can die. So I make death rolls. Also, I don't tell you what the death roll is. So your character comes up. It's his turn. It's their turn, I should say. And they have to make a D20 roll for a death save. 1 to 10 is a fail. 11 to 20 is save. And if you make 3 saves, you're stabilized. If you make 3 fails, you're dead. So the way I look at a game is one of your characters dies with the old rules. They have 5 rolls before they are either stabilized or dead. So a party member could see their person fall and say to themselves, like, well, I have at least 2 turns before that person could be dead. They could be dead on the 3rd turn. So I'm going to take 1 turn and keep fighting, even though I've seen that person fall. So I might do 2 rounds of fighting, then go over and save them. They know they have a max of 5, but they're always aware of what the other character has done during their death roll. So I like making that death roll because you'll never know where that roll's at. You'll never know that you're at 2 fails or 2 saves. So the goal of your party member, as it should be in real life and fantasy, is to save that other player and stabilize them as quickly as possible. Unless there is some sort of situation between characters where the party member just doesn't care about saving that their other party member that's fallen. So you get 3 total fails, you're dead, and I do all these rolls behind the DM screen. I don't want people knowing what I'm doing. This isn't playing God. This is doing what the book calls for death rolls. And I find it to be more exciting and more fun to just do it behind a screen so you don't know what's going on. I just feel like death rolls lead to a lot of metagaming. There's going to be metagaming. There's no way to get around it, but I'd like to limit it as much as possible. All right, talk about death rolls, fudging dice, random hell, pegs. I try to think if there's anything else homebrew-wise. I mean, like critical hits, kind of. Critical hits is a tricky area, and it's something the DM that I have right now, Tyler, hi Tyler, you're not listening, that Tyler does, where if you roll a crit hit when you're in attack, like let's say you're attacking with a, rapier. Rapier's 1d8, I believe. If you roll a crit, you would do one die roll of your d8. So you would take the first. Okay, how do I? It's tough to explain, but it's easy to understand. So a d8, you make the crit hit. You would take eight because you're rolling a d8. So it's 8 plus whatever you die roll plus dex or strength, depending on how you play the character with finesse weapons or strength based weapons. So like, let's say I get a crit hit and then I go to roll and I get a 6. Well, I would take the 8, which is the highest that DA can do. I would add 6, that put me at 14. And then like, let's say I have plus 3 dex and I'm using the rapier as a finesse weapon. So that'd be 17 damage in total. The issue with this, we found out while we were playing, is that we are level 16 rogues at this point. We do, for sneak attack, 8d6 damage. 8d6. So max total damage you can do on an attack that's a sneak attack is 48 damage. Then you'll have whatever weapon you're using. Mine's a d8 weapon. And then I'm adding on my dex because I have 20 dex. So the max damage I can do is 61. Is that right? The math right on that? 61 damage in a turn for sneak attack. But if you're getting a crit on that, you can't start at 61 and then roll. That it defeats the original purpose of doing crit hits this way, because it'd be BS if you did a crit hit with a DA and just got one twice. You did two damage. I don't know. Plus your two, you do 4 damage on a crit. That's ridiculous. It's silly. But as a rogue, you can't do that. If you crit, you have to roll twice, because you can't just start with that. We'll say I'm using, again, the 8d6, 48, and then you add on that 8, so it's for the weapon. So it becomes 56. You can't just be like, okay, it's 56, now roll. You can't do that. You're coming out with ridiculous amounts of numbers. In that case, you should roll the 8d6 twice. So we kind of came up with the idea, our DM, where if you're rolling multiple dice, you have to roll twice. I think that works. I think it would actually work if you're doing two dice, that you should do the way we're doing it, where like you're rolling 2d8s for damage. You should immediately get 16 points and then do a roll. With rogues, it's ridiculous. You should roll twice. You should not be taking max right away just because you're rolling so much. That's kind of a double-edged sword on that one. And then I'm trying to think of other weird rules that this isn't so much of homebrew is how it's how I DM, is that I will have the main story is the main story, but I'm not, in a way, I'm trying to lead the characters there, but I'm trying to make this as open world as possible. So the main story is there and they have the choice to follow the main story. It is 100% up to them if they want to follow that main story. I also add in secondary stories that might shed some more light on the main story. Those secondary stories, you can get money, you can get magic items, you can just, you know, help a person out. We don't do experience based on based on what you've done in each game or how many monsters you've killed, you come to a milestone and level up. That's it. It's just milestone XP. And it really depends on when all this happens. You know, you're not going to go from session one to session two and go from one to two. It might be session one to session four before you go one through two. I think that's kind of mean. I personally like to start characters off at two or three level. Starting one is fine, but two or three, I think, is where you kind of really get the meat of your character. But I really like the idea of giving my characters the ultimate choice. So I have to have that main story ready. I have to have those secondary stories that unlock things in the main story. But on the fly, I have to improvise and be in a situation where these characters may not want to do what I hope they do. So I have to go with that flow. I'm not going to put them on this linear path. Typically, the players do what I hope. I will give you one situation where they did the exact opposite of what I had hoped. We were in a situation where they had to sail from one area to another to stop this war between merfolk of one area and merfolk of another area. They're being mediators of this war. The first group was charging, but ships would pass by and they would charge them attacks for bringing items through their area. And if they didn't pay the tax, they'd have a crack and attack the ship and they just take everything or something like that. And all these people wanted was a tax because they're going through, you know, their space. So I told the characters about this. I said how the other merfolk are just waiting for these items to come in so they can deal these items in a local town and make money for both these groups. But at the same time, the second group is at war with the first group because they're not getting cut of the money. And all the items that the first group are stealing from people that don't pay the tax, they're just keeping for themselves. So it's this weird kind of like battle between them. That brings us to our group. I do not remember how this happened. They got a submarine. I think the submarine was built into the story. No, the submarine was so that they could get down to the merfolk city, Atlantean city, whatever you want to call it, and talk to these people. But they got in the submarine and instead of talking to everybody, they ran the submarine into the city, destroying the city, the submarine, and themselves. This game was called Death Quest. If you die in the game, something happens later on in the game. I had it planned in my head. We actually never made it to that point in the game because COVID happened. So I can get a little bit more into Death Quest. I don't think we're ever going back to it. When you die, your character goes to a city and you have no recollection of your history or past. All you know is that you've lived in this town your entire life and you never want to leave the town. And if you try to leave, you just wake up the next morning with no recollection of the day before. It's very Groundhog Day and there's a much larger story to be had from there, but you kind of start in this small town that has like 13 houses. Everybody has a job. There's certain areas you don't go, that type of thing. So they drove the submarine into the city. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't want it to go that way, but I had pivoted enough in the story where I had developed the secondary story of you're going to go to this kind of purgatory place because Death Quest kind of started as, I believe it was Spooky Quest originally. It was Spooky Quest. It was Twin Quest first. I'm going so far back. This game ran for a while. It was Twin Quest where you're playing both as yourself and as your twin that mysteriously disappeared and you're all looking for your twins. Then it became Spooky Quest when I was doing Domains of Dread. Then it became Death Quest when I had developed the purgatory system and I was accidentally killing characters, but they were incapacitated but stabilized within the game because of how I was running death rolls. So it became Death Quest at that point. I'm like, okay, I keep not accidentally killing my characters, but maybe the challenge rating's a little higher than it should be. I'll knock the challenge rating down. Oh no, I realize that I don't have enough tanks. There's not enough tanks in this group. And wizarding or being a spellcaster at lower levels sucks. When you get to higher levels, you're a god. But when you're early, like 1 through 4, you're just kind of there. It's really about tanks. It's about barbarians, rangers, fighters, really kind of keep that fight going, paladins as well. God, I'm getting so in depth into D&D. So I came up with Death Quest to kind of keep these characters in purgatory if everyone dies. And I was hoping they wouldn't die off one by one. I was kind of waiting for a situation where everyone would die. And the submarine thing took out like four people out of the group of six. So there was going to be a way. The other two were going to die. I hadn't figured that out yet. And again, COVID happened, so we stopped playing. So that's it. It's the characters can go where they want to go. I have a point A. I have a point B where I'd like them to go. A domain of dread, let's say, in the story I just talked about, was the only way to pass through a mountain plain. There were spooky noises coming from the domain of dread haunted mansion. They ended up stuck in there, and it was a TARDIS situation where, like, it's small on the outside, big on the inside. They didn't have to go in there, but they did. You know, there was an encampment as they go up the mountain where there were cannibals, like, taking people that were passing through, killing them and eating them. That's why people haven't been passing through this mountainside. They don't have to go in there. I don't think I had one of the cannibals standing outside watching them, but at no point did that person come to them. I just gave the characters the situation of, there's a dude looking at you at this cabin. It's really snowy out. You don't really see tracks or anything past this point, but there's so many of you, this one guy's just kind of watching. What do you do? They're like, well, we're hungry and thirsty, so let's go talk to him. That's a situation they were left with. They made the decision to go talk to that person. They could have easily just passed. However, they would have missed out on a secondary story about why going through that mountain pass had become so dangerous for people and why nobody just does it anymore. It's because of a giant haunted house and cannibals. That was all set up, but it's their decision to do that. That's why I never really want to force their hand. I want them to figure it out. Early on in Bard Quest, which I talked about, where they're all in the, everybody has to be a bard. There was this whole long story about Duergars, I don't know how to pronounce it, where the Duergar King had become held hostage, and Duergars are just dwarves that are from like the Underdark, and they've like, they're kind of pessimistic and angry, and they're outcasts. And a couple of the Duergars reached out to the dwarves in our parties. We had a couple dwarves and like asked for help. And the players decided no, after meeting this Duergar. Dogar? I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. So they never got the story about how the king was being held hostage for ransom. And they never got that story. And it was part of the main story, but they never got the sub story, which would have helped them accomplish something else within the main story. Yes, they're playing as bards on a cruise ship, but they also get to free this king and take over the ship and become a bard for this new cruise line. You know, that's what I like. That's what I like about D&D is that it depends on the DM or GM, but I really enjoy not having as much control over the game as a DM should when it comes to story. When it comes to how the characters play, when it comes to their lives or deaths, when it comes to pegs and luck, I like having more control over that. But I also like chaos. I like chaos more than I like control. I like luck a lot, but I don't want these characters to feel like they're in a linear story. And I say that as a person playing a modular right now in D&D, again, run by my buddy Tyler, and he's a really good DM, but the modular is very much like, go find a piece of this rod. Okay, you did it in this area. Now you go to another area and find a piece of this rod. And it's a repetitious story. And there's no veering away from the main story. You're kind of always brought back to it immediately. There's no real side quest. Like, oh, you can go into this room that technically doesn't matter and there's a treasure chest and you can get it. But ultimately, I'm just bringing you back to the main hallway anyway. And for me, like, my goal is to try to keep them in the main hallway at the end, get you to the main hallway at the very, very end. Sometimes you're not going to get there. Sometimes they're going to take a submarine and smash it into an underground city and everyone dies. And that's just how the session ends that week. And it's funny. But the game, I want D&D to be fun for everyone in the group. And sometimes we do silly things and that's fun. and it can make for a more interesting story. You know, when you're playing Pulp Cthulhu, we spent 90% of the time talking about where we were going to eat on a train from the suburbs to Chicago. Is there a dining car? What do they have on the dining car? Well, breakfast lasagna. D&D, we spent a lot of time figuring out which pubs had the best food. It's just a weird repeating thing that we do that's a lot of fun. There's some other things in there that our DM currently does not like that we do, which I will not explain, get into, but it's supposed to be a fun game. I don't like D&D when people I'm playing with take it too seriously. You know, it's hanging out with your friends night. They drink and you watch them drink while you eat snacks. When you take D&D very, very seriously, the game is not fun. And I know this as a person who has played with people that are that take it way too seriously. Anyway, that's casual yelling for this week. I just talked about D&D for 36 minutes. That's it. End of season one next week. Bye.